Blog Talk Radio.
On Wheels Now.
Welcome to On Wheels Now, your inside look at local motorsports. Live from Las Vegas, June 8th. Halfway through the year. Getting there, huh? Hosting along with myself tonight, at the man on a mission, Mr. Gary Wyatt.
How you doing?
What's up, man?
Nothing. Just...
You're up to something. Look at that grin. Eh? He's doing something he's not supposed to do.
My beautiful phone over here is working.
Of course, Freak 33, what's happening, man? Matt Esposito.
I'm here. It's hot. Well, at least it cooled off this week, so.
Right. High 90s, cooling off. That's pretty good. No. That just means it's getting real hot out, right?
Yeah, it is when you drive around with delicate things at 110 degrees.
Yeah, cool. Gary drives around with delicate things. His helper is delicate.
To himself?
Right. Hey, great show lined up for you tonight. We got in studio Dave
Campoverde.
Campoverde, okay. I was going to say that, but I didn't want to screw it up. Appreciate you being here. We're going to.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Hey, not a problem with a face we see at the track, but we never get a chance to talk to you. So this is a great chance for us to kind of find out a little bit more about you. So appreciate you being here. Well, I like to say, Gary, you got a. Racer X on the back of your. So I want to say, what happened to Racer X this weekend? He looked like he was probably on
drunk
or on drugs or sleeping. So I'm glad he's anonymous.
What happened to him? Sleeping.
He's scared. I don't know what he was doing.
There you go. Hey, did you need to make a phone call before we get started?
No. I'll make it halfway through when the show starts. A little longer, yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know what happened to Racer X this weekend, but he looked like he forgot how to drive. Aye. Were you repairing it for someone?
I can't say nothing about Racer X because
all I can say is I'm glad he's anonymous.
He says he can't drive, and when we go shooting, he says he can't shoot. So
and it's all true.
I can't say nothing but help him. I got to help him.
So he's not like the Stig, right?
No.
We'll leave it at that.
I'm just wondering if Racer X had fun, the bottom line.
Oh, I'm sure. I think anybody getting on the racetrack has fun, whether they can drive or not. So.
Even if they sit 15 laps in the infield, it's fun.
At least they got to watch the whole race.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
The best
seat in the house.
Huh?
Yeah. Jeez. At least on the turn one and two is. I don't know about three and four, but one and two is.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. Oh, what are you thinking about, Matt? You're like, trying to take it all in. What, were you Racer X?
Did I miss it?
Were you Racer X this weekend?
Nah,
is that you?
No. Nah.
Okay.
If I was Racer X, I would at least made it to lap seven.
Oh, he made it to lap seven on the flat of the backstretch. He made it to... Racer X did a great job. You don't think he did, but he did.
Racer X always does a good job because that's the most winningest skid plate car. Am I correct, or is that
yes?
Is that
because it's got no brakes? It just has to go.
Well, I heard you know that thing goes wherever you stick it, but I don't know how true that is.
Well, it depends on who's driving it, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I got a couple dents in my old car from Racer X.
Hey, let me tell you. Those guys and those skid plate cars are looked at as entertainment division, which it is. But to do the speeds are getting faster and faster.
Yes.
All the time, and to do what them guys are doing, what you guys do,
29 second laps. So you're average.
I think they're hitting down into 28s almost on some of.
So you're averaging. I think that kind of, I figured it out. Comes out to 48 miles per hour average.
Well, you know, and in those little things, that's with the cage requirements. I think they should start. Bumping them up a little bit because they are getting faster and the safety starts becoming more of an issue. Because I think some of those have the original where you just have a crossbar down, you know, between the seat or between the pillars, and then down, you know, towards the
And that was the minimum, and that's seat. That's what I had in my car.
It's not really a roll cage at that point. It's just the
right. But I think the premise behind that was the car's not going to flip,
right?
Because you don't have wheels on the back, so the you're not going to grab any friction from the rear tires.
But to me, they could still dig in on something, because those do flip.
But in my instance, the freak accident that happened with me, I think, showed that the, especially the driver door, is very vulnerable.
Right.
And I think if there's going to be any enhancement to the cage, I recommend 4 point or higher. But if anything, definitely reinforce the driver door.
Right. No, I agree. I think they should have at least 4 point, an actual roll bar with the halo.
And I've seen some of those, the driver door still opens.
Oh, yeah.
There's a few I've seen that the driver door still opens. Some of them have a bar right there that they got to get in or out over that bar. But, you know, if that thing gets in an accident and that driver door opens.
Right. Well, I think at one point those were not getting the speeds that they are getting.
Correct.
You know, and the, with that track, the banking, they actually get up to higher speeds than they do at, let's say, at Irwindale, where they run the third mile flat, you know, so the speeds are a lot different. But I don't know, that's just looking from the infield out. But and you guys are, they're really, you know, they really have some experience out there making those things stick, you know.
And it's like anything else, the more they do it, the, you know, as we all say, more seat time, more seat time, more seat time. And,
right.
And they're picking up the speeds. And
yeah, exactly. It's crazy. So, you know, and you know what happens with car counts, the less car counts, the less teching happens. Is that usually what happens? So that's what happens with less teching. The cars get faster.
Yeah.
So I think you see some of that in skid plate car racing, at least locally, I think. I don't know about other tracks, and maybe I'm wrong, but it just, you know, you see some of that, and that's attributes to some of the speeds that you see.
Well,
you
it's kind of hard, because now we're, you do have those upper cars that are fast, are dialed in, you know, and they're actually racing.
Right.
And then you have a novice, you know, somebody coming in that's, you know,
like
trying to learn. And just trying to...
Yeah, he almost got plowed there. Chico.
Well, that's just the time. Well, that's just it. Now you have...
Well, he was smart enough pulling the infield.
You have a split field.
Right.
So now it's not as easy to just jump into skid plate.
I think when we first saw those out there, everybody was out there spinning and learning and all that. But now, you, like you said, that you got some experience.
You got a split field. So it's, we have to...
Now, if you had like 15 of them out there, it might be a little different, because there's so much spinning that you have to go slower no matter what. But because there's such a small field, they're getting faster and all that.
So, yeah. So
I don't know.
I would maybe add,
bringing it up,
you know, maybe another rule, you know, for a novice rule, you know, if the faster cars are coming through, you need to let them in on the inside.
That sounds easier said than done, because those things are not as easy to maneuver as they just move out of the way, because they don't move that easy out of the way. I challenge anybody at that track that hasn't ever been in a skid plate to talk to somebody getting one, and you'll
get a different look at it.
Exactly. You've experienced it.
Yep.
You know what that's about. You know,
it doesn't drive like a race car.
You have to trust that car, and it's hard to trust that car.
You have to relearn yourself. Yeah. You have to drive it for what it is,
what
you think it is.
You know, so my point is, you know, as entertainment, that, you know, they're entertainment, but they're getting faster. You know, they're racing. They're actually competitive and as serious as anybody else out there. It's crazy. But anyways, moving on. We didn't forget about you, Dave.
Oh, I'm good. I'm listening. I'm here.
I'm listening.
Yeah, we're here to find out more about Dave. First of all, what do you race out there? You know,
I drive the 44 Pro Late Model.
Pro Late Model, okay. Mm-hmm. And in that division, obviously that's the premier division. You know, one of the premier. I know they call the modified premier, but I think the Pro Late Models, typically, just like super late models, are a premier division at that track. But they also have the rules kind of similar from other multiple tracks around, the area in California.
Correct. Yeah, they basically almost exact, and just about everything else. But the car itself pretty much is a super late.
Okay.
You know, like back when, like 13 years ago, when I was out there and I was a late model, we could only be big spring cars.
Okay.
We weren't allowed to run coilovers. And then, of course, the 970 groove tire and everything like that. But since now they opened that up and, you know, guys are out there in coilovers and bump stops. And I mean, aside from the tire, it pretty much is a super late model.
Right. And wheelbase are shorter now than, let's say.
They can be, yeah, because mine is 105. And from what I understand, they can be 101.
Is it 101 now? 102?
I know
102
like
is
that.
One,
so
which is crazy short.
Yeah,
you know?
I think I'm good at 105.
Yeah,
you know,
that's amazing. So I guess so. You've been racing a little while. Let's rewind a little bit. Find out more about you. Are you from Vegas originally?
No, originally I'm from Long Island, New York.
Okay,
and
another New York.
Hey. But anyways,
keep that attitude down, man. What's going on here?
Yeah,
just
I know, right? So I'm about 25 years ago.
Okay. Well, a lot of changes here in Vegas.
Yeah, no.
What made you come out to Vegas?
The weather.
Oh, okay.
The weather, and at the time, the cost of living was.
Yeah.
Now it's.
Cost too much here. I'm moving to Vegas. Do you have family here?
Well,
or?
Yeah. Ex-wife. Her. She had family out here, and
okay.
We used to come out here and visit.
Oh, so you were familiar with the area?
Yeah,
somewhat.
We visited for about 4 years in a row before we moved out. And I'm not a gambler, you know.
Right,
I mean,
right.
For me, gambling is like $20, and if I can't hit my million in the first 20, I'm
done. Yeah, there you go.
You know what I mean? So, it was more about the atmosphere and the scenery for
right.
me, and then, of course, the weather. I mean, you know, 110, 115 is no joke, but, you know, everything in between
the rest of the year
is perfect.
Yep. I agree.
I'll take it. And, you know, so that's why I'm here. And, you know, I started racing out here in 2004.
When you first came out, did you do any kind of racing at all?
No,
have you been familiar with racing even back
in
New York?
Not really. I wasn't even really a NASCAR fan, to be honest with you.
That's crazy. Okay.
I was more into street racing, but I mean, I have a Chevelle, a 69 Chevelle, but I didn't really street race
right.
it like you see on TV stuff. But, you know, so I had a car.
So you're always somewhat of a car
person. I'm a car
person,
guy. Yeah,
no matter
guy.
What. Okay.
Yeah.
So you come out, and did you ever go to the drag strip out here? When did you first find out that there's a race track
out first, here? My first race was a cup race. At work, they gave out tickets.
Oh.
And this one guy, he couldn't go, so he gave me his tickets, so I ended up going. I couldn't find anybody to go with me.
That's
funny. Like,
was that crazy?
I was so jazzed to go to this, you know, my first cup race and at this big, huge track out here.
Right.
And I couldn't get anybody.
What year
to go
was
with
that?
Oh, my God. I'm trying to think. It was the year after Mark Martin won. So I think it was year two.
Okay.
Because Mark Martin won the inaugural, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, so
this,
I came out.
A while ago. Cool.
Yeah. And I was kind of hooked after that, you know.
Wow.
So,
oh, yeah.
You
it's,
know?
It's probably like how I was. You're like, just in awe.
Yeah.
You know, same thing. We
well, it's cool to be
ended
there.
Up getting tickets. I went with a friend of mine, and
right.
we were just
blown away, of, man. Yeah.
Well, it's cool to see the big track
big,
and all the people.
And how
and
fast
all
they actually are.
Yeah.
The TV does not represent
right.
how fast they actually are going.
Well, and kind of being there, too, is just not just watching the race, but just being part of it, you know, hanging out with your friends or, you know, whoever you went with, you know, and just checking it out. That's part of the fun, I think, you know. Of course,
oh, absolutely.
Too.
Waiting 3 hours to get out of the track.
Hey, you know what? It is what it is.
Well, that's why you tailgate out
yeah.
there, you know.
Well, that's cool. So, kudos to the businesses that give out the tickets that, you know, made some deals because you never know where those fans are going to end up
mm-hmm.
going to,
absolutely.
Which is local racing. So, mm-hmm. so that was your first experience with the
yeah, that was
the
my
track.
First experience. And then I want to say maybe 2-3 years after that, I did the Richard Petty driving experience.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I did.
Was that because that first race you went to is always in the back of your mind? You found out there's a chance for me to actually drive one of these things.
Yep. As soon as I found out, I got the wheels in motion,
that
you know, saved
cool.
the money and went out there and I couldn't just do the ride along. I had to
you had
drive.
To be in the seat.
I got to drive.
That's the way to do it.
So.
Oh, cool, man. How was that experience? Was it what you expected?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean,
because I know, like, you know, you hear from anybody that's got onto the track, and you don't realize how much banking there really is on that track. You know, you see it, you see that it's a lot, but when you actually stand on that track or drive on that track, it's got
and you're like, oh,
heavy
I'm
duty banking.
Going so slow, can we go faster? And they're like, you're doing 110. Like, oh, I thought I was doing 70.
Right. No kidding, man. No, that's cool. So you got the experience of actually being in the seat and
right. Yeah, driving. And it just hooked me from there. And then you know, before I knew it, I bought myself a at the time they were called Charger cars.
Have you at that point did you watch any races, spectate any bullring races at the time? Of course, they were.
Actually, no, I did not. I
really?
Didn't even know that the bullring existed.
Oh, that's
until I really looked into it. So it was like several years later.
So you actually did the research and, and wanted to go more racing, huh?
Exactly. Yeah,
okay.
And that's when I bought that Charger car. So.
So you found a Charger car back
but
in the day?
But I never raced it, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I bought it and I started to do some work to it, get the motor together. Things happen with the family.
Did you realize what you're getting into at the time?
No,
you're like,
no,
man,
no.
We'll go racing at this.
Yeah.
Was it a Camaro? Or?
No, it was a 65 Chevelle. I believe it was an old Dick Cobb car. I'm not 100% sure about that. It was a 3-link car, but you know, obviously it had the Chevelle front clip on it and everything. And to me, since I'm a Chevelle enthusiast, what better car for me to drive?
That is
As soon as I started getting everything together and putting the parts and pieces together, it was just overwhelming. And
did you talk to anybody that did any racing out
there?
Yeah,
well, the guy that I bought it from, he had raced out there, and I think he was also a dirt track racer, so I think he was out at Pahrump. Yeah.
Rally Speedway.
So, you know, he
kind of helped you a little bit about.
Yeah, but then I couldn't put it all together, and I just gave him the car back, basically.
No way.
Yeah.
He was happy.
Well, yeah, because he had somebody, you know, he had sponsors and stuff, and, you know, he had a driver for it, so, you know, go ahead, take your car back.
Were you regretting any of that at the time, or it was just over your head? And
with life and everything that was going on at the time, it was just one less thing that I had to worry about, so, you know, but many years later, I came back into it. And
do you know if that person ever got that car finished and raced it?
Yeah, he was the number 97 Charger car there. I want to say
Jerry Gentry.
Gentry.
Oh, okay.
That's the guy.
Okay.
Yeah, we actually met at the track, and I was out there with the late model that I bought.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognized the car, and then we hooked up, and we talked for a minute here and there. And then I'd see him out there every weekend, you know. I mean, just like me, we're just trying to get things together, trying to make things work, and don't always finish the way we want. But you know,
so at that point
weren't
in racing anymore. You took care of your family life and all that.
Mm-hmm,
And what did you go spectate at all at that point, or still haven't been there? So
I was there and I watched. I believe it was Kyle Busch when he was in his the Legend car.
Okay,
he had won a race. And I'd never forget this because, you know, it was really interesting to me that he did a donut or something like that, and he was really excited. And I don't know I guess it wasn't the right thing to do because there was still all the cars coming, you know, when he did his donut. And they pretty much, I don't know if this is correct, but I think they kicked them off the track.
In your memory, that's what happened.
Yeah, so that's how it went down for me. But then again, seeing him in that Legend and all those Legend cars out there, I decided, well, let me go check out the Legends, right?
Yeah.
And they had a program at a time where you can go and take one out for
a road test. Okay.
Yeah, and I think it was on the infield. They had a little oval on the infield of the big track.
Yep, they did. Yep.
So I went out there, took it for like 4 or 5 laps.
Wow.
Got all jazzed.
Had a big smile on your face when you got out.
So I'm like, if I could drive these cars all day long like this, you know, it was very minimal cost to get into one.
Right.
To go in and road test it for the day, not to buy one.
Right,
obviously,
right.
You know, if they're a little bit more than $10
to
ride. But anyways, I was going to jump in a car and do it, you know, so. Again, just feeding the fire, you know.
And
here we are, you know.
So at that point, still no thought of actually racing a legend at that time?
Oh, yeah, there was a thought, but there was a finance.
Yeah, the finance. So were you just thinking, oh, well, I'm just going to put it on the back burner?
Yeah, back burnered it for a while.
And you have you spectated?
Yeah, I spectated. Yeah, oh, yeah, because I went to more Cup races. I was going every year, you know, for about 4 or 5 years. I was trying to, you know, the thing was is that, okay, I had my seats were over pretty much in, like, turn three, middle three and four right there, back when you could actually see the pitch.
From
that point of view, now you can't because they moved everything
forward.
And I was trying to get better seats every year, and it never happened.
Right.
So, and then again, also, that was the years when it would always race. I mean, always, I'm sorry, rain on race day, you know, so.
the rain out. Who's your fan? We're a fan
Jeff
of
Gordon.
Jeff Gordon. Okay.
Jeff Gordon.
You know, obviously he's winning a lot of races and, you know, had a lot of good backing and, it, you know, obviously was a great driver. So, cool. And then at that point, you've been to the Bullring, and then what transpired at that point? How did you come across your next race car?
Well, it was a guy at work, a guy that I work with.
That's funny.
And he brought it into work to get some frame work done.
Do you mind my, what do you do? I mean,
I'm a technician. I work for a GM dealership.
Cool.
Yeah,
we'll have to hit you up for some GM deals. Well, he won't because he's a Ford guy, by the way.
Well, I mean, I don't know how good my deals are because I couldn't even get a good crate motor for a deal.
We don't want to hit you up.
We'll be your fans of yours. How about
there you go. That's cool.
I think about it in and was working on his.
I'm like,
really?
I'm checking it out, and you know, we're talking about it, and you know, there was an opportunity, you know, for me to buy his car because he was trying to sell it to get himself a different car.
Cool.
And I bought it.
What kind of?
It was a metric car, I want to say, and I think it was raced out at Mesa Marin from back in the day, but it had a Grand Prix body on
it.
Did
you know, was that supposed to be a Charger?
No, that wasn't a Charger car. That was a late model.
Okay, so at that time, did you know the differences? Like,
Because
I think at that time, I don't know if they were late models. They also had...
We had lates and...
And super late.
Yeah, so basically the late models were like stepping stone to get into the supers or whatever. But you know what? As far as that was concerned, I was happy in the late model class.
Absolutely.
One, the expense of the tires, you know, and then everything else, too, to make those cars as fast as they were or can be. I was happy in the late model class with that 970
tire.
Well,
and those were a strong division back then. The only differences really were... You know, pretty much a tire back then also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean...
Some weight differences, things like that.
The last race was kind of reminiscent of what I was used to back in the day of having like 14, 15. I mean, sometimes we had, you know, 18, 19 cars, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But to be in a field of that many cars, 15 or so, that's pretty cool.
So at that point, though, you're still not familiar with the setups and what really happens behind the scenes of these race cars.
Not at all. I do my research. I ask questions. Guys help you out. You know, hey, you know, what do you think of this?
But you really didn't have any friends or someone from the track that was actually really just helping you.
Correct.
You're still
kind
of on your own.
Yeah.
Trying to figure it
and
out.
You still haven't been on the Bullring yet at that point
bought my car.
Which is cool. That's cool.
I had a car, no trailer at the time. So
you bought the what?
I know.
The
horse for the cart. I know. Put the cart in front of the horse. No,
that's it.
Well, that's cool. Though. So,
and by the way, you're not the only one. I know guys that are the same way. They got their car, but no trailer to get it at the track.
Hey, yeah.
Or a truck to get it.
Right.
You're not the only one.
You got the important thing first, which is the race
car. Right.
Yeah. One of my first races, I think it was the first race that I brought my first skid plate out there, first weekend I was going to drive. I used the car dolly, the two-wheel lifted up, I was dragging the back end all the way out to the track. Like, no trailer. It was just like, all right, I had the car. Now I got no way to freaking get it there. And I went, went to U-Haul and
rented it.
And yeah.
Back in the day, a guy that I know lives up there, Hollywood and Lake Mead area,
mm-hmm.
and he would drive his car to the racetrack,
no kidding.
And race it, and drive it home.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's
well,
he
didn't
crazy.
Even have
a
well,
car.
The worry was that if I wrecked it, how was I going to get it back? Because
right.
I needed the wheels. I needed at least two wheels to spin.
You can drive it on the skids home. What are you talking about?
Yeah, North Las Vegas police would have loved that, huh? Going down Las Vegas, our Craig.
That's crazy.
And then the same guy got a one of those Chevy Metros and was towing a big Ford on a tow dolly to the track.
That's
to race
funny.
It. Yeah.
Towed it with a Metro?
Uh-huh. One of those little three-cylinder.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Racers will do what it takes.
That's right.
Get whatever it takes to get you to the track.
That's right.
That's crazy. So when the guy was working on this car at the shop, did you help him at all or just go check it out?
We became friends, you know, so I went out to the track, I think, twice with him to help him out with the car. And
so you got to experience the pits at that
exactly,
time.
To get a feel for it.
Did that help kind of build, like, man, this is cool, man, all these?
Well, you know, maybe to the average person, it's like, well, there's just people hanging out and they're working on cars or whatever. But to me, it wasn't that at all. It was just like, it was like, wow, this is so cool, man, you know. And then when you're sneaking up on other cars that are maybe better than yours, you know, and you know, they're just a lot more finished, you know, so to speak, then that's because, like, again, I'm a car guy, I'm a gearhead, you know, and to see all this mechanical stuff,
cool.
And the engines, and it was just awesome. It's just like, I can't even explain it. You know?
That's good. So that's feeding to, you know, hey, man, I'm more excited
good.
About being here than anything.
Well, especially since the stuff you're doing on a lift at the shop where you're like, it's going to take like an hour and a half or whatever.
Yeah.
People are doing, like, you know, on jack stands, three guys underneath the car and they're, you know, switching out of gear. They're switching out of front end.
Right.
Half an hour before race time.
Yep.
And you're like,
cool.
Wow.
So do you actually help? On the car that you actually bought, you watched that car race with your buddy, your coworker racing it. Oh, that's cool. So you got to see it on the track, and the work you put into that, you got to see on the track,
right.
Which is cool. That that helps add to it all.
Absolutely,
I think so. How'd you guys do out there?
He wasn't very competitive in that car, and neither was I. But that car,
you know what? Just being involved is part of the experience. Is part of it. You know that is. Part of the fun, you know, I mean, just experiencing it and being there and, you know, so that's cool. So he's out there racing. And then at what point did you decide, hey, I got to have this car? he was looking at moving up into
exactly.
the super lates or?
Well, no, he got himself a, it was a late model as well, but it was, I forget what kind of car it was, but it was a nice car.
Okay.
It was a way nicer car than what he sold me, but that's okay. You know, it was a learning experience.
Well, you got spoiled if you got something too nice, right?
Well, you know, the learning curve, I think, would have been a little bit easier. But,
yeah,
that's you know, but it's okay. You know,
did you learn a little bit about setups at that time? Like what
well,
happened?
At first, no. At first, I really didn't know. I mean, I went out and I bought a video and a cassette. Video VHS
we're beating you here
from Speedway Motors though I mean you know and I believe that you could still watch that on the internet so anyways I had to set up a car right and so you know there's weight scales I'm like weight scale where the hell do I get weight scales so I brought it to somebody who had weight scales and we put it on the scales and we didn't do much that day. I just sat in it and
but
moved
at
it
least
around.
You're getting taken at that next step. Like, hey, now I know what these weights are.
Exactly.
What do I do with them?
Right. So, you know, I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, you kind of need the tools just like anything else, right? If you want to be successful, you need the right tools.
And brings up that point, like you see these super speedway cars racing, going left. Of course, you've been to the track watching your friend, your coworker there and other guys just going left. It looks easy. I mean, a lot of people don't know what's involved, of course, that are into the racing. What's involved in going left in circles?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot more than.
Yeah, I get that a lot. Oh, I could do that. The other popular question that I get from how fast do you go?
Right.
Like, well, you know, average speed's like 96, 98 miles an hour, you know.
Oh,
that's it.
Something.
That's it.
I do that on a freeway. Okay.
Well, now bend that in a three eighths mile.
3/8 of a mile.
And bend and do it.
Yeah.
Start to finish.
And,
so,
and 10 or 15 other cars.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, that's a good point. I hear that all the time, even till this day, you know. Mm-hmm. How fast do you go? How, you know, like 50 miles an hour. That's fast, you know, on a 3/8 mile. 90 miles an hour, that's fast.
Well, when people said, yeah, that's really not that fast. I'm like, okay, so when you go from Summerlin Parkway, that right to go on to the 215.
Do that and don't lift.
Well, yeah. Seriously, just take it at 45 miles an hour.
Right.
And I guarantee when you get down to the bottom of the hill, you're going to be wanting to touch that brake.
Right.
That's how you drive a skid plate. You have to not touch that brake.
Well,
and try to pull it all the way through.
You know, any race car going, you know, taking turns like
that.
But
that's only 45 miles an hour, but you can feel the G-force mm-hmm. when you get to the bottom of the hill.
Right. Now, it's funny because, you know, people do try to associate speed with the level of excitement, you know,
mm-hmm.
coming out of that
thing.
You mean
you don't do 200 miles an hour?
feels like it. We get a lot of G's on us. They don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, that's cool. Yeah, that's definitely something that's common, you know, how fast you go and all that. But you realize at that point, you know, what it takes to start tuning these things. And, you know, getting to the weights and stuff like that. At what point did you take it the next step?
Well, since I like to do my research, right?
Yeah.
And
that's the best place to start. The videos, you know,
videos,
the how-tos, you know,
books.
you got to learn
Steve
somewhere.
Steve Smith,
yeah.
He puts out a couple.
Steve Smith, you know, I've read quite a few myself.
The driving techniques one, and then there's the one that – Well, I guess it's really not a bad thing, but the Big Bar Soft Spring book, well, that's the book that really put me into a place to where now I want to run that.
Right.
And nobody else at the track is running that. Not at the time, anyway.
At the time, right.
So I got this metric chassis car, right,
right.
that I bought a big, huge bar for it,
yeah.
you know, and really soft springs, as soft as I can
mm-hmm.
go, because I'm reading everything,
right?
Right. And I'm thinking that it's going to work, and I'm going to be like the fastest
right.
guy out there. It don't work. It didn't work. It didn't work for me.
In theory, everything on the book or whatever, you know, this should have worked. What happened, you know? And there's
well,
a lot involved in that.
It's the wrong car to do it on. I mean, you know, at least for me, I didn't do it the right way
right.
or whatever. But and pretty much now it's kind of like commonplace out there
right.
to, well, I don't know about that big of a bar that I have, but you know, they're bump stopping it and they're soft in the front, you know.
Similar, because, right, exactly.
You know, so that's when I really started to take it to the next level. Well, when I say next level, I'm talking like I'm Jeff Gordon, but no. But for me, for Dave,
well, yeah,
that was my next level is to try to, you know, run that kind of setup
right.
and then, you know, and apply it.
Did you think at that time, like, you know, you put the setup in that, there's going to be the other end of it where you need to learn how to drive it that way,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, well, I found out that I wasn't driving it right when I wrecked it, so.
Well,
yeah.
That's usually a pretty good indicator.
Yeah.
Well, how much seat time did you have at that time? I mean, I guess we skipped something. What was your first time, whether it was practice or anything, on that track at the Bullring? Was it in that late model?
It was in that late model.
I mean,
my very first race – I didn't have power steering. The power steering went out.
What was it like when you first dropped in on that track? I mean, were you excited? Were you just like,
I was big time nervous.
Overestimated, underestimated.
underestimated.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah. I got onto the track and I didn't go as fast as I should have been going.
Were you? This was during a practice, or was it
it was a race.
So you didn't even get much practice, and you were just out there with a bunch of guys.
Yeah.
Being thrown into the wolves.
Just send it, man. Just
cool.
Throw me out there and it didn't work. And that's okay because I was back the next week.
Right.
You know, with a new power steering pump. And, you know.
So that must have been disappointing because, you know, you're wanting to do more, but you can't because of the power steering.
Right.
You know, obviously, that's hard to do, you know, in a late model. You know,
mm-hmm.
but well, that's crazy. But so how was it the second time when you finally got back out there with power steering
and everything kind of working?
It was
fun. And then, you know, you turn laps, you finish a race, you know, maybe.
Were you doing times and things at the time or just to kind of get a feel of it?
Yeah, I was just you know, trying to get a feel for it. And I didn't have anybody with a stopwatch timing me or anything. It was just go back and
you have a spotter.
Yeah, I had a spotter.
Okay.
Yeah,
that helps
yeah.
a lot. You know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, sometimes when they're actually watching
right, that's
you,
true.
And that, you know, they're
yeah.
watching something else.
Yeah,
but,
yeah we know those. I had one. I had one guy. This is fairly recent, so spotting for me, and then I told him I'm pull off the tracks. I was having some issues, and he was telling me about. So he was actually looking at the wrong car, spotting for the wrong car, and I knew it when he was telling me, okay, you got one, you know, whatever.
And
clear,
you're
da, da, da. I'm
off
like,
the track.
I'm all by myself here, and then I'm pulling off the track. And he realized he came over. I had my window net over the number. He's like, oh, that's all he said. And I knew it because what he was calling, but. But yeah, you should be right. The spotter should be watching the right stuff, right?
Well, at that point, you can't really get too upset because it's kind of hard to get people to come yeah. out there in the first place.
That's true.
But I guess that was a teachable moment.
Were you thinking like, man, why is it so hard to get anybody out here? Because this is so much fun. I mean, it's a lot of work, you know, because you end up putting your heart and soul into these things.
Mm-hmm.
But that's part of the excitement is the just what you reap out of it. You know, you go out there, you have fun. You guys, you come out of there having fun, don't you, Gary?
Every time I'm at the track, I have fun.
He's the first one to say, hey, racing first, marriage second.
That's right.
But
Bill's fourth.
Exactly right. Yeah, just like anybody else, race car first, then we'll get it to the track.
Mm-hmm.
I'll find a way.
Push it.
Yeah. No, that's cool. So you're learning a little bit. You're starting to figure out, you know, what's how these setups start coming into play. Does anything click at that point for you? Like, hey, this is, you know, this is the way, the direction I need to go. And, you know, maybe, you know, do some bar changes or spring changes
well,
or anything.
It starts to click when your lap times start coming down,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
when you're coming out of the 17s and into the high 16s,
yeah.
you know, and
yeah.
then you go, okay, all right. Not only is my stuff working that I'm, you know, you know,
right.
wrenching on the car, but I'm starting to learn to track a little bit.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, that's that seat time, you know, because, you know, on top of the car, you still got to learn how to drive, too. You know, there's a lot.
There's a lot to it than just turning
right.
left. Yeah.
yeah. Did you think at any point that it's more you than the car or vice
yes.
versa? Yeah.
I like, even coming back, I know my lap times weren't as they were when I got off the track 13 years ago. And then the car is just a little bit different than it was also because I did some changes in between.
Right.
Even though I wasn't racing, I was still working on the car a little bit here and there, throwing $100 here,
right.
you know, $50 there, and always thinking about
shit, where are you getting parts? I'm going where you're getting
well,
parts.
Not so much $50, but yeah. I mean, so.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah, a few of them.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
right. So, anyways, I came out with the expectation that I can get right back to my lap times, right?
Right.
Nope, didn't happen. I can't blame the car because the car, you know, is still the same as it was when I took it off the track. So mm-hmm. I have to relearn, you know, my braking points and the
so
cut zones.
So you had a 13-year hiatus from the.
Mm-hmm.
Well, really? Well, I mean, without getting personal, I guess why'd you stop? Yet, you know.
Like. My very last.
Did you do like? Did you go for championship points or anything for
yeah,
four seasons?
Well, we okay. So, back in 07, 06 and 07, I finished 10th in the points,
mm-hmm.
and
that's respectable, you know, out there at that track with the amount of competition.
Oh my God, the competition! I mean, like
yeah.
we had Doug Hamm out there,
yep.
Chris Bray,
yep.
you know, and those guys.
All the
just
guys that know.
They're not just showing up
nope.
to just ride around. They're showing up to win.
Yep.
And even still, Doug Hamm, I mean, that
oh,
guy's
yeah.
just
Doug Hamm,
tearing it up.
Chris Brace, you know?
Yeah.
yeah, still. All them guys.
But, so, yeah, no, you're right. To come in 10th, that,
yeah,
you know.
That's
and,
respectful, yeah.
You know, so I was happy with that,
right.
you know. So yeah, we competed. And then, like, my second to last year out there, I think it was Brandon Giannini.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He actually won the championship that year. But Johnny Spalatro or
oh,
no,
yeah.
is it not Johnny's dad, John Spalatro, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So anyways, I was racing against his dad. He
yep.
had a yellow and blue
mm-hmm.
77 out there. Well, nobody was catching Brandon, right? But because we were showing up at the track every week, you know, not necessarily winning races, but we were showing up and enough to that Spilotro and I, we were tied for second.
Oh, wow.
Going into the Father's Day double main event.
Wow. That's cool.
Day for us. But then on the second race, I wrecked my car, actually hit Spilotro.
Oh, that's
I blew the front clip off my car. Oh, kind of trashed his car too.
Yeah.
And I was done at that point.
Right.
But I think Spilotro came back out later that year, and I think he actually even won a race that
wow.
year, which was good for him. I was happy for him because
sure.
we always, you know, when you get on a track, you know your limitations, right?
Yeah.
You know, when you know you can't win, then there's guys you race with, right?
Yep.
So if mid pack, back of the pack, wherever you are, then that's who you're going to race.
Right.
So
you know who those guys are.
Exactly.
Typically. Yeah.
So I want to know how he qualified, you know, stuff like that. So I compare myself against the guys that are in my range,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, so it was good when I kept track, even though I didn't go to, it's hard to race these cars and be at the track without driving these cars.
Right.
You
right.
know,
it's
a hard thing.
That's why
I never went back after,
right.
you know, after I stopped racing.
That's a smart move, you know, because, you know, once you start going back and all that, you're going to have that itch to, I mean, it's tough to park them too, you know, when you get to that point. We knew a guy in Pahrump, the 80, what's his name, after, he's 80-something years old.
Russ Wilson.
Russ Wilson.
Yep.
You know, he raced years and years and years and years and years and years ago, and he had come out and watched, he was watching some races in Pahrump, and because he came out to watch, He got the bug after all these years.
Yeah.
He was 87 years old.
He was 86 years old racing.
Went and built his own bomber car.
Nice.
He, you know, because the same reason, you know, he stayed away because he knew if he went to watch, he would want to get back into it. And sure enough, he wanted to get back into it. You know, so he was hope for me anyways. Hey, 87 years old, I can still go racing. I might not be good at it, but I can still go racing. So.
Well, then you go to watch and you're like, I can't be in the stands. So
exactly.
You pay the extra bucks and you're in the pits,
right.
And then you start meeting up with some of the people you used to race with,
right.
Or you start talking to some of the new people, and you're like, ah, crap.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you park that, you know, obviously you probably didn't park it to keep it parked for very long, I wouldn't think. Did you expect to go back out?
Yes,
or,
it was always my intention because, like I was starting to say, the reason why I parked the car is because of the economy and everything that happened back in 2009.
Yeah, and that
08, 09.
Yeah, and that's right in that bad timing. Yeah,
and even the year before that, they combined the classes to try to get the car count
I remember that. I wasn't a fan of that, you know, because to me, when you start mixing classes, they don't. You know, it confuses the fans. You know, yeah, I understand you don't want to race four vehicles in this class and four in that, but I don't know. And that's just my opinion. Maybe
mm-hmm.
it's a good thing, but I just like to see cars stay separated, especially.
Well, I heard that one of the reasons why they did that, and I could be wrong, is that they couldn't tell the difference between a super late and a late model.
Yeah.
And since the supers, I thought at the time they were dwindling,
right.
that they wanted to put all the cars together since we all kind of looked alike anyways.
Right.
You know, and then
did they make him like start in the back?
No. Right? The equalizer was the tire.
Okay.
They went away from the slick in 970, but they put them on a 10-inch rim. So it ballooned the tire out a little bit. The speeds were still good, you know.
Okay.
And what they did is we still had, at that time, we had two classes, the late model and the super.
Okay.
Right, but we were all racing together.
So the points were separate.
Exactly. So wherever, if I finished ahead of another late model, then
you get the points.
Exactly,
yeah.
For the late model.
But if it's a super, it didn't matter anyway. They just separated the points.
Exactly,
the two. Okay. Well, you know, I understand it's tough because, like, at that time, car counts were dwindling because, you know, mainly I think because of the economy, and it, you know, a lot of people went through hardships during
mm-hmm.
that time. So,
yes,
but, so you parked it, and of course, nobody expects to park it for that long.
I figured I'd be out in a couple of years afterwards, but.
So so it's the same car that you brought back
out?
Same
car.
So can you believe it? 13 years had passed?
No, it went by in a flash really, but you know, I had, my son was, was you know, little at the time. He was about 7 years old, and
wow.
I got him into baseball. So
cool.
You know, since I go all out on everything
yeah.
that I kind of do, so I went all out with him and
so,
his baseball.
So you had a chance to
do something
do
else.
Baseball,
yeah.
and
mm-hmm.
that's cool.
And that was fun. I had the best time, you
yeah,
know,
we,
coaching
we,
little league.
We heard a lot of that. I think a lot
yeah.
of people that's been in, they spent time with their kids going through that time with football and baseball and
mm-hmm.
hockey and things like that. So, I mean, even though it was bad on financially, it was probably good for getting some of that family.
Well,
you
got to have
away
the family
from, yeah.
time. You know,
right.
I mean, it would be completely selfish if all I did was just race
right.
and everything. But I mean, if I could have got him into racing,
did your son ever have any interest in like watching dad race or?
When I was
involved.
Racing, he was like 5 or 6, so he was around in the pits here and there.
You know, because right now, you know, during the time that you were kind of coming up through racing, they had the Legends, they had the Bandoleros
mm-hmm.
start to come out, and did he have any interest in those? Like, hey, Dad, but I want one of those.
He never said that to me, but, you know, now that he's older, he's like, he's going to be 18 in December,
right.
so.
Is that crazy?
Yeah, it is crazy. And because he was just a little guy. As a matter of fact, I have a picture of him standing next to my race car in my garage with the motor that's in it now.
Wow.
As it was going to go in an old.
That's crazy. That's amazing.
So I'm going to take the same picture
sure.
now that he's
yeah,
older.
Yeah, there you go.
Right?
That's smart. That's
right?
a good idea.
Because it's coming out because I can't use
right.
it anymore. And the 602 is going in.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that picture. And
sweet.
You know.
That's cool. So that's a good idea. Yeah, kind of a before and,
exactly.
you know, today years. Picture. Yeah, that's cool. Well, that's cool. I mean, yeah, I know at 13 years probably goes by quicker than we think. I know
yes.
you know, Gary's gotten gray hair since I've known him. He used to have brown hair.
No, you mean gray hair.
He used to have long hair, but, you know, that time flies. But what made you come back to the track? I mean, was it just, did you come out and watch any races? You know, because obviously last year we were all in the same position.
Well, I was ready to come back last year, and just because my financial situation got better,
right.
and I have another coworker, a friend of mine, and he's all into it as well.
These coworkers are bad for your race life. Huh? They get you back to the track.
Yeah, yep.
No, that's cool. That's cool.
So, and so Jason Duchesny, he was always like, if you're going to go out there, man, I'll help you, man. I've been out there before.
Have, yeah.
And I was like, all right. And then, you know, I was like, all right, I'm going to take you up on that offer, man. You know, we went to go see it was a super late model race
mm-hmm.
before they closed everything down.
Oh, yeah.
With Kyle Busch,
yeah.
and he came in and
yep.
won that race and everything.
Yep. That was a good race.
That was last year.
Uh-huh.
And that was it, man. It's just like, you know,
we're back at the get
back.
That excitement. I gotta get back out here. And then
exactly.
they closed down for a year. You're like,
oh, man, it was so
yeah.
brutal.
Yeah, we were all like this, and you know, and then there was always rumors like, man, they may never open this
right.
track again. It's like, you know, what do we do with these cards? You know,
right,
and,
right.
But you know, it's good to see they pulled it together and have something going this year, and hopefully, the track sees the value in it and keeps it going. You know, year after year, but. So you kind of just started taking the steps to get back, to get the car back?
Yeah, well, I mean, the car was, when I parked it, it was ready to go racing, right? So, and then, like I said, in between those years, I was doing little changes here
sure.
and there. So I just...
So you still kind of tinkered with it?
I tinkered
okay.
a little bit here
All
and
right.
there, you know, and
That's cool.
so I took out the old, you know, smelly
yeah.
fuel and
yeah.
you know, put fresh fuel in it, and I fired it up in the garage,
nice.
And she fired up the first time, you know,
wow.
those universal machine engines.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I never had an issue with a Steve Resnewicki engine,
right.
you know. I mean, I know other guys like other engine builders out there.
Well, you know,
but
there's always been, you know, multiple different competition, Vegas Machine,
Vegas
of course
machine,
you have Keller,
Keller,
you know,
yeah.
and
so,
you know, Resnewicki's universal stuff out there has always been, you know, hey, everybody's got their preferences, you know, and they all have their own, you know, pros and cons, I guess. So
right. So and,
cool.
and that thing fired right back up. I was like, all right, I know I'm good to go.
Yeah, that's
you know,
cool,
so.
Man. So I obviously after running it and hearing that engine running
mm-hmm.
and the exhaust, you must be like, oh, yeah, I'm ready, man.
yeah, absolutely.
Next race is
right. Well, then you start, you know, when the news came out that they were going to reopen the bullring, I guess TJ Clark,
yeah,
and the other gentleman from SPS, from
Joe Faray.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Faray.
Yeah, yep. Joe. They put it together, and I mean, it was great because now I see a schedule,
yep,
and I go, okay, I can make this race, I can make that race,
yep,
you know, and
yeah,
then
you
so
can
more
actually start planning
exactly
out.
Yeah,
cool.
So
what was the first race back?
Oh crap! It was the second race.
Okay,
it was the second
the May
race.
May 8th race.
May 8th. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Mother's Day.
Okay.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. And then
you must have been excited, man. You're like,
yeah, I was nervous, man.
That's good. Because if you're not nervous, then it's not fun, right?
but then, you know, once you get out there, you start right turning some laps. I mean, I didn't make the Friday night test tune because we had problems. And like, when do I never have a problem?
Right.
And so anyways, we got it taken care of on Friday night. We came out Saturday and we turned some laps and everything. And, you know, we had a couple of things fall off the car, but we ain't going to talk about that.
Well, hope it's not something that they show you.
No,
I got a little talking to, but
okay,
that's okay. You know, we straightened out our issues, and
you know, it's
been parked for 13 years. I didn't know.
I won't get in trouble for this now because this was like 20 years ago.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Okay, I won't say it then.
I'm going to call him right now.
I won't say it then. I had a setup block that I just forgot to take out, and they showed it at one of these tech meetings. I was like, oh crap. They're like, does anybody want to claim this? And they, of course, nobody obviously would. I'd be like, nope.
Right.
So, but yeah, I know. So things happen, you know, and you know, you just, hey, you move on. So that's cool though. So you work out the bugs. That's why you're at the track, you know. Hopefully practices, you know, you get more practices in to be able to work some of those bugs out. But,
right. And then, like you said, the seat time. That's
getting
all
that
important.
Back. That's cool, man. That's really cool. So to be competitive though, you think the 602 is the way to go for you? I mean, I know there's weight breaks and there's different things that you get when you run the 602 versus what they're going to call an open motor, I guess.
Right. So, being also that I have an older perimeter car, I get like a 25-pound weight break on top of,
okay,
you know, so I think it's 2875 I can be.
Okay.
So is it going to be the thing? I mean, it already is,
yeah,
at so many tracks. Yeah. So, I mean, it's inevitable that we were going to go to this anyways, you
right
know, if they
right
wanted to keep the racing here in town, especially
absolutely
at, I mean, the modifieds are already 602.
Yeah.
I mean, so, yeah, and even if they weren't the feature class out there this year,
no,
they're a touring class.
Yeah.
So they come through anyway. So
right,
the 602, 604, all those crate engines, I mean, it just makes it easier for, I believe, for the track,
yeah,
to tech, you know, because I remember back in the day that, like, you know, after races, you were pulling parts off the car,
right,
and specifically the engine.
Yeah.
If it wasn't a carburetor, it might have been an intake. I mean,
right,
I didn't top five a whole lot, so
right,
you know, I only been into that.
But you've seen,
I've seen
what
it,
was
yeah,
involved.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, like I also seen pictures of motors on the ground.
Right.
You know, after the night of fire race, you
oh
know,
yeah,
because we have that long break. So okay,
yeah,
let's pull cranks. You know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I've heard guys, yeah, where they pull heads and they confiscate the heads until after a certain
yeah
time or something. It's like,
no,
oh man, that's a lot of work.
That's not fun. So
yeah,
you take that 602 or 604 sealed motor and now you take all that away.
Right.
So now it's just about, you know, they're a little bit underpowered than what we used to have,
mm-hmm,
with the spec motor. But now it becomes more of a driver's race than it is
right
about, you know, your motor.
Yeah.
So I think with that, I mean, they're going pretty fast. Like the 43, I think he has a 602 in his
right
car.
Well, you know, what that does with the weight brakes and stuff, yeah, they don't have the horsepower to carry it down the straightaway, but guess what? They carry that momentum through
momentum
the corner
right
better, so the speeds, you know, kind of stay up there and get
right
faster. Speaking of, like, the teching and stuff, I heard one of the tech guys this past race was being an ass to everybody. I don't know if that's true or not.
Talking about this guy?
You know that, Gary, at all? No.
I think it was a new hire.
Nothing about that.
No, you mean a new fire.
Well, you know, and you know, brings up with tech, and we won't get into teching, but, you know, you just follow what this paper says. That's all. Hey, somebody tells you, if it says it on this paper, you're just the messenger, right? Hey, this is what you're supposed to be doing. That's all I'm telling you. So don't shoot the messenger, right? All right, we'll get away from that. If that's okay with you.
I don't care. I can care less. I'm only doing what they tell me to do.
Yep.
Can't be a parent and a friend at the same time.
Oh, man. That's
like you say, it says it right here on the paper.
That's all you have to make sure. Whatever that says, that's
right.
Well, I had a little issue rolling across the scales where they thought I should have been heavier. But, you just pass that decision up the chain.
Right.
Let them make the decision.
I heard that $20 bill helps a lot. Just kidding.
Oh, yeah, that's all that needs to be said.
I'm just kidding, anybody. Well, that's tough because, a lot of times, you might scale it at home or at a shop somewhere. It doesn't match just the track scale, but guess what? The track scale is what they're going to go by, unfortunately. And I've seen the difference between a track scale and 100 pounds. So well, my scale, I'm sure you did, but it's true. They're going to be different. They're calibrated different. Sometimes they're not calibrated at all. They've been sitting around for years or longer. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't know if the track calibrates theirs, if they could show calibration sheets on those.
They have to calibrate theirs.
Well, even
they
if they just
it
zero
fit.
It.
Well, exactly right.
So. I'm guessing the heat probably plays part in
Here's another thing, with the Pro Late models, which maybe is a big variance, is the wheelbase, because you do have some that are 105, you do have some that are 108, and those scales, are typically set for one, and then when you start to move them around all the time, because you got to take the shims out, slide them, and when you start moving scales around like that, they don't stay in sync, even when you do zero them out. So I think that's where you see some of that. I don't know.
Interesting.
But anyways, we won't harp on the tech guys this week. They all do a good job out there, and everybody should be glad that there's some racing going on this this year. And I know I'm glad about it. So, that's cool. So, you think the 602 might kind of make a little bit of a difference for you, plus the being a perimeter chassis versus a straight rail chassis?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the cost end of it, it's supposed to be more cost effective.
Makes a lot of sense.
But when you're switching over from
if you just could get that GM deal, somehow.
But I actually got mine from Joe.
Yeah,
which is
funny because you're a GM.
Exactly,
but that's okay.
And when we were discussing, how much everything's going to be, I was like, well, I can't get a better deal, so I might as well go with Joe. Joe is awesome when it comes to that, because he went out and bought 10 of those motors.
Right.
And he basically said to the guys, if you need a motor, I got a motor, however you want to do it, but let's get out there and let's go racing, which I thought was kind of cool.
That's absolutely cool, because to step up and to have available, a resource like that to, for local racing is huge, especially, putting out there, if you can't just pay for it all at once, he's willing to work with you on different, different ways to get that thing,
into your hands
and so on.
Honestly, that's how us racers do it, right?
Yeah.
We rob Peter to pay Paul kind of
unfortunately,
thing.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Just so we can be out there.
Oh, my God. Hey, you got any sponsors real quick? I know
just me.
Kudos to you. Thanks for doing what you do, and I've been there. I've been a one-man show forever, and Gary's gets mad when I don't ask for help a lot of times, but that's what I've done for years. And
I have my crew chief, we'll call him Jason Duszczesny, and my son Anthony Campoverde, and his friend, which I cannot remember his name right now. But there's usually four of us out there.
So we'll come say hello. We have to track, go by and say hello to Dave.
Well, I appreciate the time, guys.
No, thanks for coming in. We obviously want to hear more about you, so don't be a stranger. We'll have you back in and get some races in there. We want to see what you do in the 602. But thanks, Dave, for coming in. And we're going to see you next race, I hope.
The 19th.
Are you going to race?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
September 4th.
September 4th. We'll look for you then. Thank you.
One more thing.
Go ahead.
July 3rd, the trucks will be out.
The late model truck series will be on the schedule for the July 3rd. Night of Fire. We'll see you there. And we'll see you live next Tuesday at 6 p.m. at allworldnow.com. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening.